magic numbers in the trucking business. Yep. 10,000 pounds. Okay, now you can't go out of state or you need a U.S. dot number. In the state of Pennsylvania, 17,000 pounds.
Okay,
once you go over that, now you need a medical card and you need a U.S. dot number. And then you go 26,000, 33,000, 55,000,
yep.
73,280, and 80,000. Now, 73.
I was going to say, what's that one?
73,280 is a Pennsylvania number.
Okay.
You can license your triaxle dump truck up to 73,280. And what that does, that allows you to run 60,000 on your three axles in the back, drive axles and your pusher axle or tag axle. And then the front carries the difference. But as soon as you jump over 73,280, you took your axles down 1,000 pounds as to what you can carry.
Yep.
So you're at 18,000 on a closed tandem per axle, which is 36,000. Now just drop that closed tandem down to 34,000. But I'm paying more money for those licenses. Exactly. I should be able to carry more, but you can't. It's called bridge formula.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the podcast, Caution Wide Right, brought to you by Compliance Navigation Specialist. If you recall, back in our first podcast episode, we chatted with John Irwin, the founder of CNS, and the CEO. But what you may not know is that his father-in-law, Dean, helped found CNS, and they both grew the business to what it is today. As vice president of CNS Companies, Dean Weinhold has moved into a role as our trusted business advisor, as a reliable expert in the industry. I mean, he holds a Class A CDL, inspection mechanic license, a certified trainer and CDL examiner, and an authorized school bus trainer. So what can we learn from Dean's over 30 years experience in truck and trailer sales, compliance, safety, and licensing management, or his long personal life as a chicken farmer? Let's find out. Dean, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
So first thing first, before we begin, I am curious. I know a little bit about your background and your love for tractor pulls. Have you ever actually competed in a tractor pull?
Yes, I have.
And what was that like? Tell me about it.
Oh, that was very interesting. Actually, what got me into it was we have a farm. We have a chicken farm. All our tractors have front end loaders on them. And I started making hay, which is kind of my hobby. And my wife said, you're not going to bale hay by 222 with a front end loader. I said, what does that mean? She goes, well, you're not going to bale hay with a front end loader. That meant I could go out and buy another tractor. So I went to hunting, and I went to find something that nobody had.
Okay.
So I found a 960 Ford. It would be a 1953.
Wow.
That a student down in Lampeter, Strasburg had repainted and did a little mechanical work to it. And I took it to the tractor pull. We never won anything. But we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's all what it's about. But I mean, those tractor pulls get serious. Some of them put, I don't know, they soup those things up pretty crazy.
Way too far.
Yeah.
I use all my tractors on the farm.
Makes sense.
When I go to making hay, I have a tractor for each piece of equipment. So I hook up that, and then I just hop from one to the other. And I do it all by myself.
We cut
the hay, and we put it in the barn. So.
Very cool. So we're talking about your chicken farm. How did that start? Has, you know, the property always been there? Did it start? Are we talking like 20 chickens? I know it's not, but are we talking about hundreds of chickens?
Okay, the background on this farm is that we're third generation on that farm.
Yeah.
When my wife's father bought the farm, he worked for a company that built chicken houses.
Ah.
So he went and contracted to get two chicken houses built and got a contract with Farmers Pride, which is in Fredericksburg. They're still in operation today, just under the name of Bell and Evans.
Yep.
And the farm has always been with them. And then he built them in 76 and 77. And then he actually sold my wife and myself the farm in 2002. And we just got the contract as what they had with the chicken houses that he built. Then in 2015, we actually tore down the chicken houses and built two new chicken houses that are only single stories. A lot less work. A lot less work.
That's good. So the chicken farming, I'm just curious. So Bell and Evans, that's actually by where I live. Is that where the chickens go afterwards?
Right. They actually are hatched right along Route 22
okay.
in their hatchery. They bring them down, and then we put them in the chicken house, give them water, give them feed, make them comfortable. It's the life that everybody would like.
Yeah.
All you can drink and all you can eat all day long. The sad thing about it, in 6 weeks, they come and they pick them up. They take them to the processing plant.
Yeah.
And then soon on your dinner table as fried chicken legs, fried chicken, chicken tenders. Like I like to say, I raise 600,000 barbecue chicken legs a year.
Wow. I was going to say, what's the number like? But that is way more than I imagined. So chicken, all those chickens, have you ever named any of the chickens?
No. Every now and then you'll get one that's just a little different. His feathers are different or something. So we kind of watch him. And we might call him Pete or Doug or something like that there. But
nothing too crazy. No. That's funny. And we'll talk more about the chicken stuff as well, especially as it relates to transportation. But on the transportation side, what got you into the transportation side of the industry?
I work for a company that we repaired trailers.
Yeah.
And they needed some more drivers in that. And we backed the trailers into the shop, fixed them, pulled them out, parked them, got another one, brought it in. And I always wanted to drive truck. And I got the opportunity through another company to be able to use their truck to be able to go take my test.
Okay.
Which I did. Then I thought, okay, I got this license. Maybe I can do a little extra. So I got with a company hauling milk.
Yeah.
It was called Amish Milk. Amish people did not want the trucks on their property on a Sunday. So we go out Saturday night and pick up three milkings. Fourth one would have been Sunday morning, and then it would have got picked up. Three milkings, and then take it to the dairy. That's kind of where my career whole thing started.
Okay. Fascinating. And I know, I mean, throughout your career, what's some of the other types of things that you've hauled over the years? I know it's sort of bounced around.
The
school bus, how does school bus drive?
Right. Well, the school bus thing is my wife.
Yes.
I was driving a milk truck, and our oldest daughter was in kindergarten, and we sent her to a private school. And at a kindergarten meeting, one of the board members of the school came in and said, we're looking for bus drivers. My wife always wanted to drive bus. So I nudged her. And we got home, we talked about it, and she goes, no, it'll snow. I don't want the responsibility of the children in the snow. I said, well, I've been driving milk truck. I like when it snows. So why don't I get my bus license too? She said, okay. 32 years, she let me drive three times. In the snow, that is.
Yep.
So
and that just brings up, what's some of the craziest weather you've driven in? Has the snow ever been so bad, or that you still drove? Obviously, they will cancel school, but maybe in the trucking side too.
Actually, I think it was 3 years ago was the worst. It started snowing soon after the children got to school, and they decided to send them home at lunchtime. The roads were that bad at lunchtime.
Oh,
I know one school, the buses couldn't even get to the school. They got stuck before they got there. I drove that day, and I told my wife she has to go along because I needed another set of eyes.
Yeah.
But made some runs for the hills, and like I said to people, I pulled my old tricks out of my milk hauling days.
Yeah, pretty spooky.
Oh yeah, sliding around.
Sliding around. Ugh. Yeah. Can't even imagine. Now, I know. Did you ever have a CB handle when you were driving?
Yeah, we changed them a lot. Yeah.
I thought I heard turbo before. Is that?
Yeah,
is that true?
That was probably the main one. Yeah, that was more when we were, how should I say, teenagers that weren't behaving too well on the roads.
I was going to ask what was turbo from, but
yep.
I can see it. All right. So, you and John, you guys both worked together to purchase Carolyn's Notary Service and then eventually built it to what it is today. And then, of course, you started DW Trailers as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So how did all that come together?
Okay. Do you mind if I just go back to why we why we are here today.
Definitely.
Okay. I work for a company where I sold trailers, and I sold a medium duty trailer. It was over 10,000 pounds, but yet it wasn't a semi trailer. And to be able to be legal going down the road, you had to have a license on the power unit that took care of the truck and the trailer gross weight.
Right.
It's called a combination license. So I would sell you a trailer, and it would be a 14,000-pound trailer. And when I sold it to you, you'd hook it up behind your pickup. You could go down the road. And I knew that if you got stopped, you're going to get a big fine.
Yeah.
I can't sell you that.
Yep.
So I got into researching. Actually, the business before we bought it was Carolyn's Notary Service. Carolyn Adams owned it. Mm-hmm. And I did all my trailer transactions through her.
Yep.
And I got this combination license thing going, and she helped me get numbers of people at PennDOT that I could call and talk to about this and find out how to get this accomplished on a person's pickup.
Yeah.
Which we got that going and that. The company that I work for went through a merger, and I knew that the trailer sales were not, since it was a new company, were not where they needed to be. So they kind of, I knew they were going to ask me to leave.
Right.
So, which they did. And they said, here's the deal. You leave, you take the trailers with you. We don't want them.
Interesting.
That's what I did. That's how DW Trailers started.
Yep.
Since then, we kind of dissolved that. I like President Trump, but he's the one that put me out of business. Well, he didn't. Just the tariffs put me out of business. Because as soon as they put the tariffs on the steel, the trailer companies put the price up.
Exactly.
And there was no profit left in them.
I'm curious. So, you know, CNS has grown so much over the years since taking over Carolyn's. You know, what are some of the things, whether it's with John, whether it's the company's grown, what are some of the fondest memories? And I'm curious, what are some of the most stressful times?
Okay. Let me just explain a little bit how we actually got this. Okay, Carolyn helped me get these combination license, and I learned a little bit about it,
yep.
And I kind of got more and more interested. She was getting up in age, mm-hmm. And I know already I said to her, I wouldn't mind owning this business. And, okay, and then I know one day I walked in and I said, hey, I said, where are you at on selling the business? She said, last week I signed it up with a broker. I'm like,
oh, yeah,
really? So, okay, I said, okay. And I said, can I work through you or do I have to work through the broker? Where are we going to go? And she said, no, you can work with me, but I will talk to the broker. John Irwin, married to my oldest daughter, Melissa. I had told Melissa several years before, why don't you get a job down at Carolyn's? And she was in the food business also, and she liked her job, so she didn't do it. John was in the food business also. And after they got married and they were going to have their first child, John comes to me and he goes, you know, I'd see children and the food business not working together.
Uh-huh.
I said, yeah, you're right. I don't see that working. It's all nights and weekends.
Yep.
It's right when you... I said, I'm looking at something. I said, I'm looking at Carolyn's Notary Service. Here's why I would like to get it. Combination license, truck licensing. He came back about a week later. We had a conversation. He did his homework.
Good.
So that's what we did. 2010, we bought the business from Carolyn Adams. He soon realized that the licensing business and a little bit of dabbling with truck stuff that we did was not going to give a great income. It's going to give an all right income, but not a great income.
Yep.
So he started looking, and we started talking. So what we decided, anything that we felt the industry wasn't doing as well as it could do,
yes,
if we can do it better, we're going to go after it. So I think the first thing that was happening was, one of the first things that was happening, the you would get a person signed up for their IC number, their MCC number,
yep,
or a PUC number. They'd have to go back to their insurance company and get some certain binders,
okay,
to bring back to get filed to the ICC,
okay,
or to the federal government. They drop it. So then they'd soon get a letter stating that their ICC number is invalid or, yep, it's on hold. Okay, why is it being dropped? Well, a lot of insurance companies that they were dealing with were car insurance people. They weren't truck insurance people.
Yep.
We did check with a guy that did do trucks, and he just dabbled in it. He wasn't full-time in it. He was more into the car and home stuff. And we couldn't get it to work. It was overwhelming to him because we had too many clients. So John and Melissa both went and got their broker's license to be able to handle insurance, and then it started taking off.
Yeah.
The other thing is compliance. That US dot number above the national average, you're going to get in an audit. John learned what the audits all looked like.
Yep.
When you get a US dot number, you're going to get a compliance audit. Okay, well, I went to them for the companies that I work for. I know what they're all about. And I didn't have everything right, but he studied it. He knew what they're, you know, he knew what they're going to ask for next.
Exactly.
Like I used to tell the clients, I said, yeah, we represent you at your, for US dot number. As soon as that officer looks up and sees one of us walking in, you see him go, oh, yep, this, yep, is going to be an easy one.
Yep.
15, 20 minutes later, we're walking out the door and the guy got a good record.
Yep.
So it just started building on that.
And a lot of it too, it's seeing the need, and then it's hearing the need from clients. Hey, can you guys do this? Like we, and then it's like, again, diving into that research, right, and that's awesome. I mean, so much has changed. So, I mean, you talked about, you know, when getting the insurance company growing, and then we have, you know, growing from licensing to DOT compliance, safety management, mock audits, going to different locations. I know John would travel all around the U.S.
Yes,
for clients to do, yeah, these audits. It's pretty impressive, the whole transition over the years. Do you have like a proudest moment overseeing all of this?
The DTC, that's,
yes,
kind of my baby.
Yep.
And being able to get the third party licensing through. I mean, you looked at that application, it was, an inch thick, and it's like, how do you work through something like this here? We muscled through it, got it through, got the licensing.
Yes, yes. Starting CDL school itself, I mean, there's so many loopholes there that you have to, like, you got to walk through and rules to follow and things like that. And, so starting out as a tutoring school, helping train, mm-hmm, these people up, getting their permits and getting them ready for what, sending them to,
we would state, actually take them to DTC.
Yep.
Actually, the way we got started, there was a couple young men from church,
okay,
that wanted to get their, what they needed to get their CDL so they could go on harvest crew out in the Midwest.
Okay.
And yeah, one guy comes to me and he goes, you know, he said, there's another company that goes to another person that goes to our church that has a trucking company, but he can't teach anybody,
yep,
because of the insurance. So he said, check with me. So he checked with me, and I said, let me call my insurance company. I called my insurance company, and they said, as long as you're in the truck, we're happy.
Yeah.
I said, okay, come on, let's go. So I taught him what I know and took him to Mountjoy Votech and passed the first time.
Awesome.
People at Mountjoy Votech are kind of, who's this guy?
Yep.
Who's this guy? I took about my fourth person there. They offered me a job.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they knew as soon as I came in, my people were ready.
Yep.
Yeah, they were ready to go. They knew what they needed to know. They knew how to do it, and they did it.
So what's it like growing from, so you were the trainer, the first trainer.
Yes.
Right? What was it like, what you know, growing, adding on for new trainers to come on? I mean, there's a hiring process, there's an education process, and then it's got to be the right fit too for, mm-hmm, being a qualified trainer or a quality trainer like, mm-hmm, you. What's that like, growing that part of it?
That's challenging.
Yeah.
It's, you as a truck driver, there's only one person in the truck. You become a very independent person.
Correct.
And to be able to take instruction from somebody else, I never drove full time.
Yeah.
But I was in charge of a lot of people that did.
Yes.
So it's like I knew what needed to be done, but yet, you know, you don't have quite the experience. Well, yeah, I do. I can hop in anything and I'll get the job done.
Yep.
But it's to train that person, get the trust, you know, that what they're telling me. Or being able to talk through things like, how do you, you know, this guy's having a problem doing this.
Right.
How do you teach him how to downshift when he doesn't want to, you know, do it correctly?
Yep. Yeah.
The way we got our preacher at paper that we still use today, I had a gentleman from Baltimore. He came up to get his license with us or to get training with us. And he said, can I just videotape you doing a pre-trip? I said, yes, you can.
Yep.
He came back for the next session and he had it all typed out. I said, may I have this? Mm-hmm. He said, yeah. Did a little tweaking here and there. Still use it today.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's curious. So, you know, obviously the transportation, the chicken farming industry, throughout the years, there's been so many different types of changes. I'm just curious, what are some of the big changes that you've seen, whether it's on the regulation side, whether it's just how the industries have changed?
I guess the easiest way to say that is the industry, the federal government wanted the trucking industry to self-regulate itself.
Right.
It didn't do it. It just totally flopped on that one. So the federal government started looking at how many accidents there are with trucks.
Yep.
And they said, okay, let's just pick a number. There's 1,000 accidents a month with trucks. We want to see that down to 500.
Right.
So we're going to regulate you people that you can't drive any hours you want, that you got to do hours of service and that. And in 1 year, we want to see that down to 500 accidents per month. Well, it didn't get there.
Yep.
So they put more regulations on. And that's what caused the CDL license.
Yeah.
Because they, I would be a trucker. I didn't do this, but I would be a trucker that would drive the lower 48. Okay. And I would get a license down in Alabama, a truck license.
Yep.
I get a license in Pennsylvania. Well, when I'm in Pennsylvania, get stopped in my truck, I'd hand him my Alabama license. Okay, now I pay the fine, but there was no recourse back to me as a driver.
Right.
So I'd be down in Alabama, I hand my Pennsylvania license. So the federal government said, okay, we're going to tie this thing all together that no matter where you get stopped, there's a database that's going to keep record of what you do. At this, shortly after they brought that, it was right around the same time they brought out the U.S. dot numbers because they took the trucking companies. The trucking companies were some of the culprit too, because they would say, hey, you know, this load got to be in Utah tomorrow morning. Well, that's an impossibility, but they would force you to drive more hours than what you should be to the regulations. So they started the U.S. dot number, and then they kept track of what happened, and they got a national average. As soon as you got above that national average, now they would come out and audit you to see why you're above the national average. And it's so it kind of got a hold of the drivers, got them under control, the trucking companies got them under control.
And that makes sense. And that, you know, obviously over the years, it's just getting more and more, you know, stricter because there's either more and more loopholes that are popping up. They're trying to fix that. They want it, you know, I think theoretically zero accidents. You know, that's never truly going to happen. But
I was at one seminar right when the CDL came out, and the guy showed clips of accidents.
Yeah.
And he'd say, now watch this clip. Who caused it?
Mm-hmm.
It was a truck accident. Okay, but it was actually the car or a pickup actually caused the truck accident. So the trucks always got blamed for it, even though it was a car. The car probably cut somebody off and never got touched, but the truck had to make maneuvers to be able to avoid hitting something else and hit something else.
So. And it will definitely get interesting if whenever, you know, the public, you know, vehicles on the road gets more and more, in essence, regulated for safety and things like that. And, you know, I know when the ELDs came out, the truckers were like, well, if you're going to do that to us, put it in the other vehicles, everyday vehicles as well. it's a nice thought, but
yeah,
won't happen for a while at least. So,
right.
But yeah, man, it's all interesting, and so much has changed over the years. And that's, you know, here at CNS, you know, that's one of the things that we like to focus on is, okay, what are these regulation changes? How do we keep companies in compliance? And then of course, you know, going above being compliant, because you're going to get audited. How do you find those, you know, being above board, not get sued, not if a mistake or if an accident ever happens, you know, looking clean. But I am curious on the farming side. So farming operations, do you deal much with the trucks coming to pick up the poultry at all?
Yes. I should have calculated that out. I'm thinking it's like to do a flock of chickens with the delivery of the chicks, delivery of the feed, and then picking up, dropping the equipment off to get the chickens out of the house, and then the live haul chicken trucks coming in. I was thinking one flock of chickens runs right around 20 trucks coming in and out my lane in a six-week period.
Okay, wow. Yeah. That's incredible. And obviously, you know, those trailers, you know, what's some of the mindset that you think of, you know, again, you're growing the chickens healthy, and giving them the best life as possible. And then there's the transportation side of that as well, which you want to make sure that that's a good process as well. Do you have a choice in that transportation process, or is it the company that you work with, how they're being transported?
It's the company that I work with, and they are, they switched it when they built their new plant. They switched over to some new types of ways to haul the chicken.
Okay.
They have curtains on the side. They have a lot of ventilation.
Nice.
They actually have lights inside the trailer that are calming lights to be able to keep the chickens calm as they go down the road. I know if it gets below 40 degrees, they have to put the curtains on to keep them warm.
Yep.
In the summertime, they actually park them in an air-conditioned barn to keep them cool before they get processed. Yeah, they're very, the company, Bell & Evans, is very animal humane.
Right.
They strive to go over and above what the regulations are.
That's awesome. And so what are some of the biggest challenges you face with that livestock and the poultry side of things? Is it like managing when these companies are coming, or the trucks are on your property, or?
They tell me when they're coming.
Okay.
I have no say in that.
And so do you have to deal with the chickens getting onto the?
No.
Okay, good.
No, I don't.
That's so nice.
They'll call and they'll tell me generally almost a week in advance what day it's going to be.
Yep.
And then about 3 days prior to that, they tell me what time it's going to be. Last time my day started at 2:00 in the morning.
Yep.
And I had to get the chicken houses ready for them to come in and pick up the chicken and take them out. And then they left there right around, they were done, I'm thinking right around 10:00 that morning then.
Yeah, that's impressive. So talking about some of the you know, environment that we're in with, you know, the trucking industry that we see today, you know, we've gone through the pandemic, freight recession, you know, we're trying to get out of that right now. How do fuel costs, supply chains, sort of disruptions impact the trucking industry, especially on the chicken farming side?
You missed the big one for chicken farmers.
Go for it.
Avian flu.
Yes. And that's been for years now. There have been some big spikes.
Yes.
How's that affected your company?
It affects us pretty much. If a flock tests positive within 3 miles of you, they will take the chickens out, but they won't put the peeps back in until the quarantine gets lifted. If you're in a 6 mile radius, they have to, well, even with the 3 mile, they have to get permits to get the chickens out. So they come in and they test your chickens to make sure that there's no avian flu. I know they were testing, I'm thinking it was like 12 chickens a week. Like while they were growing up.
Yeah.
And like in the 6 mile, I was in a 6 mile radius. I was in a double 6 mile radius. I had one from the north and one from the east.
Wow.
The neighboring farm, which is less than a mile away from me, he only had one. So I was right on the edge. But they had to get the permits. So the USDA has to say, yep, they're good to move. They don't have the flu.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, just this last year, here in the heart of the farming industry here in Lancaster County area. I mean, we were dealing with it this year, right?
Yes.
Or was it more last year? I can't remember.
It was last year.
Last year was the...
Yeah. It's actually carried by the migrating birds.
Yes.
So you got the Canadian geese coming out of Canada, and they're kind of, they carry it, but they don't really affect them. So they carry it down to their winter home where they're like Floridanites. They run to Florida, and then they come home again. So when they're going south, we kind of catch it. When they come north, we kind of catch it again. We just do a lot of security issues, meaning, you come on the farm, I'm not going to let you near the chicken house.
Well, exactly, because, I mean, that's what the news was this last year, was there starting to be some of this avian to human potential crossing?
That kind of got debunked.
Okay, it did get debunked. I was curious where that was at.
Yeah, it did get debunked. It tested, it looked like it, but it wasn't.
But it wasn't, yeah. Ah, it's always interesting, because once that happens, then it's like, look out, who knows?
Yeah.
So regulation, since we're talking a little bit about that, obviously here at CNS, that's what we like to dive into. And we talked a little bit about how things have changed. You know, CNS, we're all about proactive safety, getting ahead of things and being above board. What does proactive safety mean for you, and how do you see that, whether here at CNS, maybe when you're training drivers, out there, or even with the chicken farm?
Okay. Actually, I deal mostly with the driver training center. Yep. I'm an examiner for them. It's when I go out to test somebody, it's like, okay, I like to see how they handle themselves.
Yes.
I know there was one lady from up in Lebanon County. She came in. She was really nervous. So I tried everything to get her nerves to calm down. Even told her to run around the truck 3 times. She didn't do it. But we got out in the road, and she had it. She had it. And then when I get back, I say, hey, I said, if I was hiring somebody, I'd hire you. You handle yourself really good. You're not afraid of the truck. You make the truck do what you want it to do.
Yep.
And to be able to teach somebody that, that's hard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, obviously, you know, the skill, you're only going to get better at driving.
Right.
But it is that mental state of...
Right.
Are you going to be a good learner?
Yeah.
And then,
or
yeah.
Are you going to be afraid of it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Interesting. And so I'm curious, over the years too, with the driver school, have you seen students sort of change, the type of students that we get in? Obviously, there's different ages, different career changes that they might be doing. What's sort of the trend that you see?
I see more people, especially with jobs getting a little harder to get, more people are looking at the trucking industry. You can make really good money there.
Yep.
The thing that they don't tell you is you got to be married to the truck to make that money. You got to be in it day and night, because you're going to sleep in it too. But you got to be aggressive with it. When I first started training people, I had a lot of farm boys.
Yeah.
They're used to big machinery. They get in that thing and, you know, they'd soon have it under their belt and be out the door.
Yep.
Then we started getting some other people that they never were in a big truck and they want to drive one. That's a challenge. That's a challenge, because you got to get them used to being able to get used to the width, the length,
yep.
The weight. It's a big thing too.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, the farming industry, I mean, they're pretty lax, or not lax, but there's a lot of more leniency on the regulation side of it, or they're regulated different than on the trucking side.
And I can give you an answer why.
Yeah.
We had a state police in one time to talk to a group of trucking people that are our clients. And state police said, we're not going to talk about farmers because their accident rate is so low. They're used to being around it. They're used to big machinery and that, and they know how to avoid those accidents. We're going to talk about the people that are out in the road all the time that don't, that their accident rate's higher.
Yeah, and it makes sense. And like you said, they've been around all the time. My dad grew up on a farm in Oregon, and I think he was driving truck on the farm 11, 12, 13. You know, that's that time frame.
Not uncommon.
Yep. And then, of course, missing school for farm season. But that was grass seed and all that fun stuff. But, totally different world than on the agricultural side. And I'm curious, when you think about trailers, you know, there's a lot of different rules, things to think about on trailers. I'm curious on your trailer expertise, what are some of the unique, I don't want to say loopholes, but like things that maybe a company would potentially forget about for purchasing a certain type of trailer?
I'll tell you what really takes some time to learn.
Okay.
It's called bridge formula.
Yeah.
I dealt with a lot, when I sold trailers, I dealt with a lot of contractors, and they would buy a piece of machinery. Once they bought the piece of machinery, now they have to get it to the job site and to the next job site, because if they can't move it, they can't make money with it.
Exactly.
So why buy it? And I would sit down with them, we'd find out exactly what that piece weighs. We would say, what for truck are you going to pull this tag-along trailer with?
Yep.
Now, what tag-along trailer do you need? And I would help them work through that. I know the one gentleman sat like just where you're sitting, and I said, you want to pull this with your 10-wheeler, not your triaxle. And he goes, why? I said, if it's your triaxle, you're going to be overweight.
Yep.
Your 10-wheeler, you're going to be under. It made sense to him. And I said, the other thing that happens too is there's magic numbers in the trucking business.
Yep.
10,000 pounds, okay, now you can't go out of state or you need a US dot number. In the state of Pennsylvania, 17,000 pounds.
Okay.
Okay, once you go over that, now you need a medical card and you need a US dot number. And then you go 26,000, 33,000, 55,000,
yep.
73,280, and 80,000. Now, 73.
I was going to say, what's that one?
73,280 is a Pennsylvania number.
Okay.
You can license your triaxle dump truck up to 73,280. And what that does, that allows you to run 60,000 on your three axles in the back, on your drive axles and your pusher axle or tag axle. And then the front carries the difference. But as soon as you jump over 73,280, you took your axles down 1,000 pounds as to what you can carry.
Yep.
So you're at 18,000 on a closed tandem per axle, which is 36,000. Now just drop that closed tandem down to 34,000. But I'm paying more money for those licenses. Exactly. I should be able to carry more. But you can't. It's called bridge formula.
Yep.
Very hard to explain, but when you show it on when you have it and show it on paper and you talk through it, and then the other thing I tell the people, okay, go to the scale and then make sure your axles weigh out for you. And if you have to adjust that weight, one of my jobs at that company also was buying construction equipment. I was the appraiser. I would go out and appraise a piece of equipment. And we had a customer in Georgia when the Olympics, Summer Olympics? Yeah, Summer Olympics were in Georgia. That was in the 90s, I think.
Yep, yeah. I think so.
And we had a customer down there. And he would say, okay, I need so many of this crawler, I need so many of that crawler. So I'd go out and find them, and then the guy that I worked with, he was one of the owners of the company, he would buy them. I'd get them in, get them loaded on a transport trailer. We'd go to a scale that had the steering axle, had the drives, had the trailer tandems on different scales on the scale so you could see where you were at.
Yep.
I'd sit on the machine, we'd untie the machinery, and I'd sit on the machinery, and he'd begin looking at the scale, telling me to go this way or that way with a piece of machinery to get so he wanted to
right.
scale. So when he was going down to Georgia, he could go right on the scales. He knew he was going to be right, you know, no questions.
Yep.
That way he could.
Cargo weight management, always fascinating. Always yes. fascinating. And then I won't even talk about cargo securement because that's a whole other thing. Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine, especially flatbeds and things like that. But and there's also one more number, 82,000 now, and that's electric vehicles get a 2,000 weight bonus just because of the battery pack.
That's a little shy in my book.
Which I guess that leads into, let's talk about the future transportation trucking. You're a CDL trainer. Examiner and school bus side. I'm curious, what advice do you have for people getting into the trucking industry?
When I started with the milk hauling business. The owner of the company called me up after I put my application in, and he goes, "Now, you understand what this is?" I said, "Yeah, I understand." He said, no, hear me out. He said, "Milk, the cows go milk every day. That means that we have to haul milk every day.
Yeah.
Are you willing to work every day?" Now, you say that doesn't pertain to the trucking business, but it does. Goods move every day on the road. You have to be willing to get it from point A to point B, and you have to do it in a safe manner. It only benefits you. It benefits the company you're driving for, and it needs to be there.
Yeah, oh, totally. And then on the school bus side, I recently wrote an article about getting, you know, becoming a school bus driver. I know there's always been a shortage of needing school bus drivers in you know, especially our specifically local area. They're always asking for it. What advice do you have for people thinking about becoming a school bus driver? It's a lot of different types of people that can want to do that.
Actually, they I like to say they pulled me out of retirement. I taught school bus driving as to become a school bus driver in Pennsylvania, you need 14 hours of classroom training.
Yep.
Okay. Every 4 years, you have to go back and get 7 hours of classroom training to keep your license.
Okay.
I did that recertification class for 10 years. And when I got my examiner's license, I said, okay, I'm going to give that up. I'm not going to do that anymore. This summer, the person that's in charge of the school bus, the IU-13 here in Lancaster County, kind of put a plea out on an email, and I emailed him back, and he said, "I'm glad you did." He said, "I need you to come back and teach." But now I'm teaching the new school bus driver's class, part of it. And like I say, okay, when I drove milk truck, that milk that was back in that tanker was worth $10,000.
Yep.
Okay. If I had an accident, the insurance company's gonna have to pay out $10,000 to those people, you know, to cover the cost of that milk. When you have students in the back of your bus, there is no value.
Yep. Priceless.
It can't be replaced. Yep. So you have to do it to the best of your ability and to the safest way that you can. You gotta be safe, arrive on time, but still be safe.
Yep. Yep. That's a good thing. That's a good, you know, mindset to have, especially when you're training here, because Linda trains here as well, right? Your wife trains here and drives.
Yes.
Awesome. How long has she been doing it? I mean, I guess you both have, but
32 years.
32 years. That's awesome. And that's what's needed is that sort of retention.
Let me explain why I became a school bus trainer.
Okay.
You have to recertify every 4 years.
Right.
Okay. I heard if you become a trainer, you don't have to go to school to the classroom.
Yep.
Okay. I didn't want to go to the classroom. So I found out what it takes. Found out when the classes were, and I went to the classes. Unbeknownst to me, you had to teach the class to get your school bus trainer certificate. Yep. And I thought, okay, I got it. Good. Did whatever we needed to do. And then, actually at one time the state of Pennsylvania said, okay, all these trainers, they're not quite up to snuff. So they have to go to the 7-hour classroom training. When the lady that taught that class seen my name on there, she kind of went, "Oh yay, not him." So I went to the class, and I kept my mouth shut. I kind of had a reputation a little bit on that. So I kept my mouth shut, and at the end of the class, she said, "Yeah," she said, "when I seen your name, I went, oh, yay." But she said, "I'm glad you're here." And she said, "Would you mind helping me teach?" She had some health issues. She could do one night, but the second night, she was wore out.
Yep.
She just couldn't go. So if you do the second night, and I said, yeah, I said, I'll do that for you. I can do that. So we divided up the book, and she took certain things that she was better at. I took the things I was better at, and we taught. We did that for 10 years then. So.
That's awesome. So as, I guess, you know, a lot of truckers out there that might be listening, you know, maybe they're thinking about retiring and maybe becoming a teacher themselves. What's teaching like? What's is that a skill you can learn?
You have to enjoy people.
Yeah.
you got to enjoy people because you got to be someone that just talks a lot.
Yep.
Explains things, takes it down to little details. Some people you say, okay, don't shift the gears like that, and they don't. The next person, well, why?
Yep.
You know, why do you shift them that way? And be able to explain that. Not that you have to know it, but, yep, you know, we can teach you that too. But you got to be able to listen to what they're saying and be able to explain it to them. And like I like to say, you got to be able to explain the same thing about five different ways.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't they don't catch on this way, they don't catch it this way. And then you say it like the third way, just a different way of saying it, and you see the light bulbs go on. It's like, oh, okay. And you go out and try it, or you're in the process of trying it, and they go, yeah, okay, I can do this. I can do this.
That's so rewarding. I mean, my wife works in the school industry as well, and she gets to see that as well. And that's it's so fun. And, you know, that's with all the different trainers that we have here. Sometimes it's just like, he's not getting it with me training him. Let's move him to another person. Maybe they can just provide new thought process.
Have a different way of saying it.
Yep. So, I mean, that's what's great here, because it's the one-on-one training versus a group training of like 20 people at one time and managing that. Yeah, and even, you know, the CDLs, school process, what they want to educate or what they want them to focus on, different backing techniques, different, things to think about. It's all still relatively the same thing, same process, and especially the pre-trip. It's that same, you know, what we like to teach, you know, to be tested and to pass, there's some wiggle room. But we want to over and make sure it's in their minds, because if they're going to be in there doing it daily out there, doing it correctly, and then again, DOT inspection, go on roadside and getting pulled over, that they got everything, you know, relatively squared away and don't have to worry about that. I mean, that's the focus here too, is going above and beyond on that teaching.
It's one thing I didn't have a lot of experience with. The first time I ever got pulled over in a truck was on the east gate of the Indiana Turnpike.
Okay.
it was a little comical. He's seen me, I seen him. I come through the toll booth. I had easy pass, so it was pretty quick. As soon as the gate opened up, I pulled out. He turned his lights on, so I found a place to pull inside. Pulled over, and he walks up on my right hand side in the grass.
Yep.
And I put my window down, and he goes, I didn't see any lettering on your truck. I said, oh? I said, there's lettering right on the door. I had magnets that I would put on. And he steps back and looks. He goes, yeah, you do. He said, why isn't there any on the other side? I said, well, they're magnetic, and it blew off.
Oh.
He said, yeah. He said, I think that does happen sometimes. But since I stopped you, we're going to go through the whole, go through the, I forget what class they said it. He said, do you have your logbook? I had it in my phone. I showed it to him. And he didn't know how to read it. He just said, it looks good. He said, show me that you were off last night.
Yeah. If you can prove that you can work it.
Yeah, that I was off duty.
Yep.
And he said, okay. He said, I'm going to take paperwork back to my car. He said, I didn't have the trailer because that was on the trailer. He said, you get the trailer registration card and bring it back to me. So I'm walking back through, and it was a flatbed, so I'm hitting my chains as I walk back through. I hit one and felt it was a little soft. So I went back, gave him the card, and he said, I'll be up with you in a couple minutes. Just take a little bit. So on my way up, I retightened the chain.
Yep.
Hopped in my vehicle again. And he comes up, and he goes, yeah, he said, everything looks good. He said, I'm not going to cite you for not having a sign because I believe you that it blew off. And he said, I'm just going to give you a warning.
Yep.
I said, okay. Gave me the warning. I said, well, I said, I want to congratulate you. He goes, why is that? I said, you're the first one to stop me in 25 years. He said, I am, yeah. He said, you know, it could have went a lot longer. I said, how could have that been? He said, because you didn't have the sign is the only reason I stopped you. Other than that, you looked correct.
Yeah.
Someone that looks correct generally is correct.
Yep.
And if you'd had your sign, I would have never been talking to you today.
Exactly.
I said, thank you.
Yeah, that's the spot check at roadside. That's, you know, some of it's keeping the vehicle clean. If it's a, you know, if there's a lot of rust on the vehicle or something like that, keep an eye. Well, that's what the construction industry
is. What he was looking at was the way I had things tied down.
Oh, yep. Tied up, yep.
And, it was done correctly.
Yep.
I know different times I'm there and someone's tying a piece down and they look at me and they go, am I doing it right? I go, yeah. You're doing it the way you do it, which is correct, but not the way I do it. And they said, well, now what would be the difference? And I say, well, I take this chain from this point to this point. The only reason I do that is now they can see the chain. The way you see it, they can't see the chain.
They can't see it. Interesting.
And he goes, that makes sense. I think today he does do it my way.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, that's, again, it's all about presentation.
Right.
Right. And then it's also how you act at roadside. Right. It's how, you know, again, that mentality of things. And so it's just, that's interesting. Have you been, so is that the one and only?
Oh, no. No, that kind of.
How about worst case?
I do have a worst case. I do have a worst case. I will say this. I got to be friends with some DOT officers over the years. We have a mutual respect for each other.
Yes.
I was coming out of Cincinnati, and I was pulling doubles.
Yep.
I do have doubles and triples license. I was pulling doubles, and I was coming out the turnpike, going east on the turnpike. I come into the Blue Mountain Tunnel, which is a double tunnel. And as I come around the corner, there's a right-hand turn coming into there. I looked over at this one officer. I could just see him glaring at me. I thought, oh, man, he's really looking at me way too hard. So go through the tunnels, and you're supposed to run a right-hand lane. I ran a right-hand lane. I mean, I try to do it as correct as I can. I come out the tunnel, and that tunnel, you come out, and it kind of drops off to the left, and it's a downhill, and it's like, get out of my way.
Yep.
Speed limit 70. We're going for it. I look in my mirror. Here's this cop sitting right next to me. Not up the cab, at my second trailer. He pulls front, backs up. Pulls front, backs up again, and I see he's looking at it.
Yeah.
Pulls in behind me, lights him up. So I pull off to the side of the road. And he comes up, and he goes, gives me a, I don't know how to say this, a long BS line.
Sure.
And I listened to him, didn't interrupt him. I knew it. I knew it was a BS. And he turns around and he goes, okay, I'm going to go back to my car here. Took my paperwork back. He said, it'll be a couple minutes. I said, okay. I said to him, can you get me the article numbers for what you just told me? He's like walking and it's like he just stops, mid-stride stops.
Yep.
Thought to myself, this can go good and this can go bad really quick. He turns around and he goes, I'll get them for you. I thought, we're doing all right here. Because I looked it up. And he goes back to his car and he comes up to me and he goes, now he said, I can't let you go on like this. You have to drop the one trailer. I said, well, is there a maintenance building or something close by that I can drop it there? I don't want to drop alongside the road. He said, yeah, I don't want you to drop it alongside the road. He said, there's an exit up here. We'll go down there at the exit. So we went down to the exit, and I went back to him, and I said, I'm good, but I ain't this good. I can't back that second trailer in a parking spot behind the other trailer. I'm going to have to unhitch, rehitch, back that trailer in, and then hook up to him. He said, I got stuff to do. I'll just sit here with the lights on. That'll keep everybody away from you. Do whatever you need to do. So I did that, came back, and came up and he said, I'm not going to fine you, but the fine's $300. Okay. And he gave me the article number. And he kind of looks at me and goes, you know, I understand what you're doing. And there is a federal law that you can pull two new trailers, but you can't pull a used trailer with a new trailer behind a pickup. That's what I was behind. It was behind my pickup.
Yep.
And I said, I know that law. He said, well, that don't pertain to you, so you can't pull that one.
Right.
And I said, okay. And I thought, I read this. So, needless to say, I got on my way. I just went back the next day, picked up the trailer, and brought it back. Then I got the book out and I researched it, Title 75 book, and the article that he gave me. Yeah, that's the one I'm using. Here's how picky it is. It reads, a truck tractor can pull two trailers. A truck tractor, not a truck.
Right.
My was a truck.
Yep.
It wasn't a truck tractor.
Yep.
That's why he stopped me.
Man. That's interesting. And so do you think he was spotting, he could tell it was a new and used trailer, or is it because you...
I tried to explain that I was a little safer because I had better brakes on the trailer than a new trailer. You know, I didn't argue. He said, but that's not the law.
Yeah.
You know, what a lot of people don't realize is the officers don't make the laws.
Correct. That's
they just enforce the laws. Yep. And they don't all read it the same way, but the way they read it is the way they're going to enforce it. He read it correctly. I was wrong.
Well, and that's what's nice about the data queue process, too, is if they read something a little bit off, because, again, the regulations are complicated, and there's a lot of, you know, whether it's black or white, there's a lot of gray area in there. But that's the data queue process. One of the things that we do that we help out is hey, we can challenge that if it makes sense to do so. But, yeah, good on you to, you know, know it, look it up, research it, and now you know.
Yep. Back to the first time I got stopped, the officer did give me his business card, which isn't up. And he said, you're ever out here? And he said, you're running into trouble. He said, you call me. I ran into a guy that used to drive for me who ran wide loads through Indiana for the company that I was managing. And he said, I think that's the same officer that stopped me because I got his card too. Yep. And he said, anytime. He said, you just call me. I'm out here to help you guys. I'm not out here to.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people need to realize that they're out there to help you to the best that they can. There is limitations.
Exactly, and again, it's personality too. But I mean, yeah, they all go. I think they're trained in Colorado as the headquarters for DOT trainers, and they have the whole school system that they have to go through as well. So, treat them like cops because they're police officers because that's how they're trained to look and inspect and follow those rules. But that training, you guys can look up the training of what they have to think about and what they go through. And if you want to look up how they see that side of things, all that information's out there. And, you know, again, the regulation books are out there. But obviously, if you need someone to help hold your hand to stay in compliance or know what those regulations are, you know, we are the experts. We have the experts in the office to understand this mindset and going above and beyond and understanding your company's business and how it pertains to state, local, and federal rules and regulations. But check out cnsprotects.com, our CDL school, cnstrains.com. We've gone beyond the just tutor now and helping them train full on CDL school for hotshot. So if you got a pickup truck hauling, do you need a CDL? Do you not need a CDL? We always like to say, get the CDL in the first place, just future growth. If you ever want to do anything else with it, you have it. And you can check that out. But Dean, any other thoughts that you have? I love diving into all the your background here and just all these nuanced things. It's fascinating.
When one of the things that I like to say, CNS is top of the line or top of the game, is when it comes to the licensing of trucks. I know my youngest daughter Melanie works on the license counter, and. Every now and then she'll give me a call. She go, I don't know how this guy's figuring this out, or how do you figure this particular thing out? And I'll talk her through it, and then and sometimes she goes, it's just a little too complicated. Can he call you? Get the call, and then we find out what they're doing. Yeah. It's very important. When I worked at the other company that I managed the trucks in that, people knew this licensing thing pretty well inside and out.
Yeah.
So they'd like to come in and try and make me say stuff that I really didn't say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he said it. So I learned to really listen to people, find out what they're doing, and then try and help them figure that out, how they can be legal out there. The whole key is you want to be legal.
Exactly.
If you can't do it legally, you don't want to do it.
Yeah. And honestly, some of that mindset too is if you're just going to try to skirt the rules, you probably don't want to turn to CNS to help you out staying in compliance with the regulations, because we're going to poke at you and try to like, hey, we see what you're doing, but
right. Right.
We want to work with the good companies, and that's what the DOT officers want to see. Is if they see a good company out there, you're not going to get inspected for a while.
Right. Keep below the national average.
Exactly.
And just keep running, keep making money.
Exactly. And that's what we need in this industry right now. You know, the economy, where it's going, can it take off again? No matter what, you know, the freight recession we've gone through, it's been hard the last year and a half, 2 years. And if you've been making money in this process, man, when things go right, and it could only go up from here. And so that's what we want to help you out with, is finding a way to do it right, make that money, and then have your company just be able to take off when the economy takes off even more again. But hey, Dean, thank you so much for chatting with us, giving all your background here. I guess with that, stay safe out there.